Before we get into the show, there is a brand new way to support the FitGas. If you don't want to go through patreon.com/thefitgas, where if you are, we have like 260 awesome people that are helping me make this show every single week. You can now support the show by going to thefitgas.com. And when you're going to go make those purchases, maybe you got to get some toilet bowl cleaner, got to keep those toilets clean. Maybe you're going to get some dog food. Maybe you want a new computer monitor, maybe a new stereo. Maybe you want to get a new book and smarten up a little bit more. Maybe you want to go and get, I don't know, a go-kart. Maybe you need a go-kart. Where are you going to go get that stuff? You're going to go to Amazon, right? But if you just go to thefitcast.com/Amazon or go to thefitcast.com and click on the Amazon tab on the upper right-hand side before you make that purchase, they're going to kick back like 1% to 3% of each one of those purchases to the FitCast. You're still going to get the same great deals, same great discounts, savings, customer service, and shipping speeds, but they just kick back a little bit to support the production of these shows. So before you go pick up that toilet paper, before you go pick up, I don't know, that space heater, it's going to get cold out, it's wintertime. Maybe you want a pair of wool socks, which I just bought a couple pairs, highly recommended. Go to thefitcast.com/Amazon or click on that Amazon tab on the upper right-hand side of the website before you do any of that stuff, and you're going to kick back a little bit to help make this show possible. So it's another way to help support the show, and if you do that, I am greatly thankful. I really appreciate it, and may I recommend you go treat yourself. Go get something and, you know, treat yourself. You don't have to go crazy, but maybe you want to pick up a new Blu-ray movie. Maybe you want to pick up a new Adele CD. I don't know. Taylor Swift is pretty good. You know, she has CDs too. Or maybe you got to, like, you know, get some gifts for the holidays. This is going to be one way that you can help support the show and get what you need to get done, or maybe treat yourself. Maybe a Fast and Furious poster. I don't know. I don't know. Maybe that's just me. But thank you so much. If you go to thefitcast.com/Amazon, you're helping the show and you're getting your shopping done with great prices, great shipping speeds, and the best customer service in the world. Thank you so much. Here's the show. Welcome back to the FitCast. This is episode number 364. My name is Kevin Larrabee, and back on the show, you may have noticed a trend. We had Lee Peel on, we had Tony Gentilcore on, mm-hmm. and then we had John Fass on.
I saw that.
Dr. Fass.
Sure.
You earned it.
Thank you.
And yeah, I don't, this kind of just like happened that I interviewed Tony, and then like I finally was able to get Lee. I've been bugging Lee for months to get on the show, and I was finally able to get her on, and then we happened to record for 2 hours, which you guys have heard. We actually recorded that after I did the Tony's one, but sorry, Tony gets upstaged by Lee Peel. When Lee Peel comes on the show, I bump her to the front.
Burn, Tony.
That's all right. Tony knows what's up.
Tony's doing some big things right now.
He is doing some big things. And to be fair, like he wasn't like, he was like a regular. He wasn't like a host. Like you, this show has gone through a couple reboots.
Right.
And for one of the new classes, you and Lee were kind of, it was like you, me, and Lee for like a good like 80 episodes or 50 episodes or something like that. So
about a year and a half, 2 years at least.
Or maybe more than that. Maybe closer to 100. I don't know.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's always good to catch up, because during that time we spent so much time talking together. Like, you know, sometimes you don't realize that months go by, and it's always good to catch up with the people that we've heard from so much on the show, like you.
And how did I not mention the off topic that I hung out with Lee in Asheville?
Yeah, she mentioned that. Yeah. I don't know if she mentioned it on the show when we recorded, but she said that she met up with you and Marianne. So that's awesome.
Yeah, it was awesome.
And she's real, right?
She is a real human being. She's not a robot. She's not
like a skin computer. Job.
Yeah, no, man.
Battlestar Galactica. Nope. That's not a derogatory term. That's what they called the...
That's true. That was a great series.
That was what they called the robots that looked like humans. Yeah. Actually, same thing in Terminator. They
it
did
actually
that in Terminator
would be a derogatory
too.
just in that universe.
Yeah, I guess it was. It was like a class thing.
Yeah.
Because they're robots. They're not humans. But
robots
they have feelings.
In disguise.
Also, check out Ex Machina. Brought to you by Ex Machina, if you haven't seen that yet.
I haven't seen it yet. It's on, it just launched on Amazon Prime, so I'm going to watch it.
Oh, did? Oh, you have no
excuse. Yeah, it's on Amazon Prime, yeah.
Oh, I have the Blu-ray. It's great. Anyways, we spent about 25 minutes talking about stuff that's not fitness or rehab or health or nutrition or mindset or wellness or whatever for the agenda-free people, or I should say for the Patreon people. And the proceeds from this episode that has been generated by people that are supporting the show through Patreon, it's going to be roughly about $300 is going to go to the ASPCA to help prevent the cruelty to animals, which is a great organization, and it's a perfect episode to have John on for because you're such an advocate for that as well.
I am indeed.
It just happened to work out that way. I just realized that. But I mean, if you didn't listen to the episode with Lee, the proceeds of every fourth episode of the month that is generated through Patreon is going to go to charity. It's going to go to an organization. I mentioned a couple like the ASPCA, the Michael J. Fox Foundation, and a couple others that are going to be kind of my go-to for, helping support because, it's good to give back and, it's a way for me to give back every single month. So thank you to the Patreon supporters for giving me the opportunity to do that stuff.
Hey, did you ever think about doing like a Patreon poll where they get to choose?
Yep. I asked for people to submit, and I mean, a poll would be something I could do. Mm-hmm. But like, I really feel strongly about the four that, I put together, in terms of like cancer research, Parkinson's and, obviously prevent animal cruelty.
Yep.
And like that stuff that I think is, I mean, I feel strongly about those, but I think the way that I put it is that if you have, like, John, if you were about to do like a, raise funds for some charity event or something like that, and you're like, it'd mean a lot if you, helped support me in this event. Like, I would totally be down for considering that stuff too.
Right.
If you have ideas, it's just kevin@thefitcast.com. If you guys ever need anything, I literally get like 4 or 5 emails a day from listeners. Don't be afraid to shoot me an email and say what's up. Because
in other words, Kevin needs friends and he misses you.
No, yeah, I mean, I just feel like, put it this way, and I won't spend too much time on this. I have so many people that come up to me at events like seminars or they send me emails who say things like, this show means so much to me. It helped me with my career or with my health, or just I look forward to hearing the people that you have on every single week. And like, don't ever be afraid to like shoot me an email and like ask for something or ask for, want to like a question, or if you just want to like say what you think of the show, because I think the thing that I never want people to do is feel like they can't approach me to say what's up. And that's like happened. Like people like, oh, I was like worried to like say hi to you at the Perform Better. So I'm like, I'm standing here at a booth. Like I'm here to be talked to. So if you want to say hi, I want you to do it. And also it makes me feel like people listen to the show. So
yeah,
it means a lot to me too.
No one ever comes up to me.
Well, it's because they can't find you, John.
Yeah, it's true.
Because, you got to get not height at disadvantage, but
I'm at a height disadvantage
a little bit. So, we have a lot of stuff to talk about. We actually did this a little bit last minute because I'm trying to record a bunch of stuff before the holidays come up. I just don't know what my schedule is going to be like. And I wanted to get you on before we wrap up the rest of the new year, because you've just come back from not just come back, but you're back in the States after a long time in Saudi Arabia. And,
yeah.
I mean, you're still kind of, putting together your plans of what the next step is, but have you felt like you've been starting to, I mean, it, just from me observing you from outside with like social media and stuff, you're definitely starting to like get your feet wet again and start getting the wheels turning in the fitness industry.
A little bit, yeah. I mean, I'm ready to go back to work. I've taken you know, a nice little sabbatical, and it's been a lot of fun, but I think Marianne wants to get me out of the house. But besides sure. that, I also feel, you know, pretty good to go back and to start working again, you know, regularly. And not so much, you know, what's interesting, I still remember this, and you and I had this debate discussion probably 2-3 years ago about the role of social media. And you were saying essentially like, dude, forget about it. And I was like, no, it's these arguments are good. And these, you know, we can reach people.
Oh, you mean like arguing
stuff.
On Facebook and stuff.
Yeah, that sort of thing. You were totally right. I was totally wrong. Because it is, I've gotten to the point where, and it's a shame, I hate to say that if anyone knows me, they know me because I argue with people. That's probably not a great thing to have, you know. And
right, and it's not in like a negative way. It's just, and it's just so hard to get your tone across on the internet.
If you don't agree with me, I'm a dick. I mean, that's essentially what happens. And you start to realize you're just having the same arguments over and over again. I love debate. I love exchanging ideas, and it's civil debate. And unfortunately, on social media, you're either going to surround yourself with people that you know personally so that it's always civil because we know each other, we're bros, we're not coming at each other. But more often than not, it's just not the case. And people will have strong opinions about whatever it is that you're discussing. And that civil debate and that opportunity to learn something and to possibly change your opinion, or someone else will look at something a little differently, just rarely happens. And it just started to get to the point where I was like, you know what, this is detracting from my life rather than contributing to it. And it certainly does affect it. Like, I think that I'm I don't see as much, you know, I do certainly, I was seeing more things when there would, you know, be these kinds of arguments or whatever, you know, in terms of what people were posting in rebuttal, or, you know, things that you would have to look up, you know, oh, they brought up a point, what is this, you know, type of thing. So that does take away, unfortunately, but at the same time, it's stressful and it's not enjoyable because we're not having a debate where we say we both respect each other's opinions and let's see if the other person is right, which is what a good discussion should be about. It just becomes two camps that are going to, you know, kind of bunker down and fight. And unfortunately, that's not really productive. So as much as I enjoyed the positives of a nice discussion, more often than not, it just ended up being a fight. And that finally just got to me. And I was like, you know what? Done with that. So I do still post things. I still enjoy, you know, if I read something or whatever, I want to share it, but I don't get involved anymore. I just, you know, if you don't like it, post underneath it and someone else will reply to it. I'm not getting involved.
Yeah. And I think we're going to wrap this up real quick because I know some people hate this discussion, but I think that is something, you know, for you personally and also professionally. I think if you do get into too many, not saying that you did this, but if you get into too many like arguments on Facebook and stuff like that, it generally puts off a, you know, part of what people may perceive as your persona. And that could hurt you
absolutely
professionally as well. And those professional like connections may have given you outlets to actually talk about this stuff more, that those are then closed off and you don't get to reach the people, you know, the amount of people that you might want to reach. And I don't know. I think it is weird in this world that we live in today with all this stuff. And I think and this is up for debate. Like Eric Cressy, like did this thing about like new fitness professionals, like 40 tips that you should follow to make sure, like, you know, you can be successful. I forget exactly what it was up on his website. Mm-hmm. But he said, never talk about politics, which I agree with, to a certain extent, but you know, still like, I like the Daily Show. Like if I see a clip from the Daily Show that I really like, I'm going to, you know, share it. I'm not going to say, hey, you know, everyone who doesn't agree with this is wrong or something like that. But I'll be like, hey, you know, this is a really good segment and this might help educate some people on a subject that, you know, seems to be not too well represented by, you know, certain people. So,
yeah,
you know, it's an interesting discussion that will be continued to have will be continued. We will continue to have as the, you know, social media infects our lives going forward.
Sure.
But like, over the course of maybe like the last 9 months or a year since I talked to you on here, what have you been researching? Like what has been intriguing you as you start again thinking about like ramping up getting back into the field, or not into the field, but, you know, practicing more and more, what have you been contemplating? What have you been thinking? Like, what is your position on these things?
Yeah. I mean, you know, the kind of, you know, the pain science sort of stuff is always still very interesting to me. I'm very much drawn into the psychology and the sociology of the patient experience. And that's been a lot of what I've been sort of looking into.
Like what about? Because I think that a lot of that stuff could, you know, be used for people that are personal trainers and coaches out there too.
No, absolutely. Well, I think that what happens is as professionals, so if you look at like the pain stuff and, you know, the kind of things that we talked about on our pain series that we did a year ago or whatever, it's biopsychosocial, meaning that it is biological and biomechanic, but psychological and sociological have, you know, a tremendous amount of influence on how much pain or how little we might experience, how long, all these kinds of variables, which is why simple biomechanics can't explain pain sufficiently, certainly not for an individual standing in front of you. It's not going to be a broken bone every time or, you know, whatever it is. So within that, you start to, you know, you may ask the question then, how much, what can we do and what do we do? What kind of signals do we send as professionals, as a healthcare provider, as a personal trainer, whatever it is? What are we doing that we're unaware of, both positive and negative, to the people that we're instructing and working with? So that kind of thing, you know, when a patient comes in, they have an expectation. They're bringing with them a whole bunch of beliefs and thoughts concerning their experience, the pain that they're having or the mobility issue or whatever it is. What does this mean? Will I get better? Will I not get better? What do they expect from me as a physical therapist? You know, pain and torture, which is what PT apparently stands for, or is it understanding? And if I don't provide that, what do they think? You know, if they come in expecting me to just, you know, well, I went to so-and-so and they cracked my back and they twisted me up and they did all these things and that's what they think will get them better, and I offer them something different, does that mean that their expectations are not achieved and therefore they don't think I'm very good, and by not having faith and trust in me, it will affect negatively the outcomes, right? So things like that. And then as personal trainers, what is it that you're educating your clients about? How are you encouraging them? Are you, you know, warning them about injury and warning them about health and warning them about all these things where you're suddenly making their environment somewhere that's scary and something to be guarded against, which can have negative repercussions in their life? Or are they the type of person that wants to fight a good fight, so they're looking for something like that? You know, so those topics are things that really interest me. I mean, learn how to teach someone how to squat, sure, and learn, you know, how to put together a workout, sure. But after that, what are the things that also contribute to someone's performance and health and recovery if they were injured and whatever? That, I think, are these topics that we tend to gloss over, you know, when you read these blogs or whatever, or worse, you know, well-meaning, including myself, I'm not a psychologist, I'm not a professional, you know, degree in psychology, but where are we learning this information from? You know, is it from the blogs that are well-meaning, but they're talking about their own individual experience, and that may or may not actually apply to lots of different people? So they're saying, well, you've got to treat a client this way, but is that true? Mm-hmm. Do we know that we have to treat, you know, and is everyone that I train the same person? Do we all have the same beliefs and understanding of what it is that we're doing and what the exercise means and what health means and what their goals are and why are they their goals? So I think those topics and having a better understanding is just opens up an entire new world of how you influence the people that you work with.
Well, I can help you out. Like, PT stands for physical therapist.
Yes, thank you. Yes.
Okay.
It does.
So are you thinking about going and opening a clinic? Are you thinking about doing something like IFAS, where it's a mixture of that and strength and conditioning? Like, what are you thinking about doing?
As of right now, I will just go back into the clinic and just get my feet wet again. And really, you know, I was a physical therapist for 5 years, but it certainly wasn't the kind of fast pace, you know, 3, 4, 5 patients in an hour type of setting that I did before I left, you know, so I have to get reacclimated to that. And I do not believe that I'll ever open a clinic, because as much as I do enjoy economics and business, but I'm not a business person. And I think that when people open businesses, you know, possibly if I had a partner that they were, you know, dealing with the business side of things, maybe that would be one thing.
You need your Pete Dupuy to the Eric Cressy kind of thing.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's just not, I don't think that I necessarily want to do that or feel the need to do that. Mm-hmm. That could change, but I don't think, I remember very specifically, one of my professors in school is our anatomy and biomechanics professor, and he was an amazing clinician, and we'd always ask him, you know, are you going to open up your own clinic? Because he was so good, you know, you just think that naturally he's going to, and he was like, oh hell no. And you know, as students, we were like, well, why not? And he's like, because I enjoy being a physical therapist. I don't enjoy doing, you know, the accounting and the bills and the advertising and all these other things. Right. That comes along with owning a clinic. So, you know, he was like the senior physical therapist at the clinic that I worked with. He worked very closely with the owner. I mean, he was probably like the second in command there, but he had no interest in taking over all these additional responsibilities. Mm-hmm. And I think that if, you know, we kind of forget that as professionals sometimes, you know, are you happy with the income that you make and the role that you have? Owning a business is not necessarily more of that. It's something additional. And if you love business, do it. But if you don't love business, then why do you want to do this? You know, Marianne and I both, we've had those discussions a lot, because she's had those same feelings. Like, should she be opening some type of gym, some type of this or that? But she's not a business person either. So for her, it's probably going to be a negative experience to be in, have to, you know, oversee all of these different things that take you away from the things that you love. If you own a business and you enjoy it, more power to you. I mean, that's great. But if you don't, then really just the question that you're asking is, am I satisfied with my life as it is right now? And if not, how can I be more satisfied? And it doesn't necessarily mean by opening a gym, because that's a whole nother level of stuff.
So let's kind of, I mean, this, I feel like almost on the last episode with Tony, I did too much industry stuff, but
speaking of people open up their own gyms.
Right. I mean, well, he's kind of going into almost like a subletting kind of setup where he's renting space at a time period and all that stuff. But, you know, let's talk about the general people that are listening to this show and just want to like continue to kick ass at what they're doing.
Right.
I think one of the things that's still kind of evolving over the last couple of years, even like the last couple of months, even like the last couple of weeks at MBSC, we just had someone, Anna Hartman, who used to be at Exos, who came in and did a talk that is kind of inspiring us to make some changes in the way that we set up our warm-ups at MBSC. And I was curious, like over the last, again, year or so, like how has your thought process really changed at how you would put together a warm-up for someone? And, you know, I want to talk about the people that are not like the athletes, but the general population, people that are spending that 8 hours a day, maybe 9 hours, maybe 10 hours a day sitting down and then having to prepare them to start throwing some weight around.
Sure.
Has your mindset changed? Like what are your warm-ups like looking like?
I don't think that it's changed, but it might be fair to say that it's evolved to a certain extent.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
I mean, I think that when I put together a program for any client, certainly you're not, you know, if I'm doing like online training stuff or whatever, like as for a patient, the warm up is not really as a specific thing, because your goal isn't like, oh, I'm gonna get this person super strong, whatever. There's a different goal set there, right? So. But I still kind of think that it probably informs a bit. So for me, when I'm looking at this warm up, I think that we used to look at it first and foremost as like physiology. So it used to be the whole throw someone on a bike for 5 minutes and get their blood pumping. And that's still probably fairly valuable, but there's no reason to think that it's not. But then we moved into this idea of getting your joints, specific joints, and, you know, ready in the, you know, dynamic mobility and getting the muscles prepared for the movement that you're going to perform. Mm-hmm. And I think that I still look at it in those terms, but what I look at it as this, it's a neuromuscular warm-up. It's the preparation for activity. Mm-hmm. And you're going to go from the general to the specific warm-ups. But even within the general, I think that that really needs to be dictated over what you may have found either in your initial evaluation ongoing evaluations, right? So do I feel that this individual needs more mobility here, more control over there, and I want to put warm-ups in place that will hopefully begin to address that issue. Mm-hmm. A warm-up is just an exercise. It's just exercise. That's all it is. So it's just lighter something, right? It's more skill-based versus...
It's literally warming your tissue up to then undertake the load, right?
Well, no. Not the way that I would look at it. And someone can tell me that I'm absolutely wrong. That's certainly a part of it. There's changes to the body when you begin activity, mm-hmm. right? So there are things that happen. Blood gets shunted to muscles versus digestion, things like this. But... neuromuscular, I think, is fairly important.
How cool is that? Like your body gets, it's like rerouting power to fields. Yeah.
Absolutely. Right. So that's certainly important because blood is how we transport nutrient to, waste product from, that sort of thing. So it's important, but that generally occurs in exercise. And there's always the idea that if, I'm walking through the woods and get chased by a bear, I don't warm up, I just sprint, there's value to the warm up. I've seen things where people are talking about, forget the warm up, you don't need it. I don't know that we can say that. I think that there's a value to a warm up. But I also see people that it almost seems like half the workout is a warm up. And that seems a bit, crazy as a general concept also, it's a little bit extra, a little bit more than we probably need. So let's say I have someone squatting. Okay. First, I'm going to look at everything that they do in their squat, in their movement. What are the exercise they're performing? Are they performing it sufficiently to my standard? If not, what are the things that are happening when they, is there some mobility thing? Is there some control thing? If I lighten the load and that doesn't get any better, then it's a practice sort of thing. So for me, the warm-up really means practicing for the event itself, practicing for the thing that I want them to do. So a warm-up could, warm-up and cool-down. Like in a cool-down, I'll probably have them static stretch, but in the warm-up, I might have them do some dynamic stretching and getting them a little bit more prepared for their activity. If I notice the warm-up improves it, I keep that warm-up. If the warm-up doesn't improve it, I throw it away because it's not doing anything, mm-hmm. right? So I want to see that the things that I'm having this individual do are actually having an effect on their performance. And that's essentially what it is. I want to check my warm-ups, not throw some random arbitrary stuff. Oh, you need glute strength, so I'll give you some bridges. Well, did those bridges help their squat? If it didn't, then it's not a good warm-up for that exercise. And it may not be a good warm-up for anything that they're doing that day. Because if the only lower body exercise they're doing is the squat, then the warm-up has to help that. If the only upper body exercise they're doing is a bench press, then whatever may be going wrong, or something that I want to be performed better in the bench press isn't helped by the warm-ups that I provided, then I need to do something different. So, have them start off, jog for 5 minutes, whatever you want to do, that's fine. But once we get into the more generalized physical preparation for the workout part of the your hour or whatever it is that you're going to work with them, you want to see that it's actually doing something.
Mm-hmm. There's a couple different places I want to, but before I forget, you were on the Strength Coach podcast, kind of like the mm-hmm. sister podcast of the fitness. Yep. And, you were talking about pain stuff on there. So I would recommend for people to go check out, I don't know what episode number it was, but by the time that you hear this, it was like maybe a week or 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. So, something like that.
It wasn't that long ago. You can just check it out. strengthcoachpodcast.com. So I don't know. So I guess like kind of going from here, how are you going to structure this stuff though? Because I'm always curious to compare with, what other people are doing, what we're doing at MBSC, and to see why the comparisons are different. But, you get someone into the gym, you have your client. Again, let's just use that person that is working, that sedentary job, and they're coming in to train at 6 p.m. after working all day. Right. What are you doing with them first, and how are you preparing them to get ready to lift? I know, again, let's try to I understand they're doing exercise where you're warming them up, but you know, right. before they get into what you wrote them for, you know, their trisets, your, you know, supersets or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, generally speaking, it's supersets or trisets. What am I doing specifically? You get the standard. Well, it depends on the individual.
Give me some general ass stuff. I'm just talking to like structure, like are you foam rolling, stretching, foam doing rolling. Activation. Like what?
So
are you
they're
doing?
Gonna foam roll. They're gonna stretch at the end. Probably some dynamic warm up and flexibility into more specific warm up stuff. So, you know, control. And I look at it as control. We used to say activation stuff, and activation is a kind of buzzword fuzzy thing that I'm not entirely certain is really applicable. What are we activating and how do we know it's activated? But we can certainly say control, right? So I can expose them to
glute control
movement. So you know what it when we say activation, activation just means that you're turning the muscle on and off, but the muscle is always on. But can we certainly emphasize control? Practice allows you to have better control. Okay. Right. When you first start playing the guitar, your fingers are all over the place after practice.
I think, you know, if I'm just speaking for like MBSC, I think what we're doing with the term activation is trying to make that make more sense for the person that when we say, all right, we're going to do activations right now, we're going to do glute activation and it helps them. It's just a better translation for them to understand, you know, why are we putting this, you know, band like under our knees and then, you know, doing a bunch of like hip, you know, abduction, adduction stuff.
Yeah. And I think I probably shying away from the term activation. I think it's fine if you just want to make it make sense to someone. But certainly the muscle is always on. But what we are looking for is kind of a refreshing, a reminder, central nervous system activity of control.
So awakening.
It's sort of, right. The muscle's always on, but, you know, it's the same kind of thing as like, you know, when you drive and you're suddenly there and you go, oh, how did that happen? Because you're kind of on cruise control. But it may be the case that you may need to have a little bit more attention to that movement. And it's not really muscle active. Oh, yeah, your glutes aren't firing. They're certainly firing. You're just not working.
It is like a waking them up, because if you have someone, if you just have someone come in cold, or if you have them even do your foam rolling and stuff, and you say, all right, let's do 8 single leg deadlifts on each side without doing the activation or whatever you want to call it. And then the next day you do it with the activation, you actually have them do some kind of like hip stability work, whatever you want to do for your activation stuff, is clearly going to be better after you do the activation stuff or the warming up stuff. But maybe that is what you're trying to say is like you said, you are exercising, you're lifting, but you're just doing a lower load and you're doing it maybe on a more almost even like isometric fashion.
You're rehearsing neurally. Rehearsing, and you're emphasizing neural pathways.
Shit, I like that word. What's that? I like rehearsing.
Yeah, that's what I look at it. I look at it as a rehearsal. I look at it as rehearsal before the big show. So if someone is going to squat with weight on their back, I'll have them squat without it. It's not the same, but it gets them prepared for an activity, and then you start to put on weight, and you progress weight until they're at the weight that you want them to use or they're comfortable with or whatever. That's all that is. And I don't go any further detailed than that because really without the ability to actually look at muscle activation, all these sort of things, how do I know that that's what's happening or this person needs it? So I tend to – I don't want to emphasize these guesses in a clinical fashion. When I'm standing in front of a person saying, well, it must be because your muscles aren't firing. I don't know that.
But you get, okay. So this is where like the internet debates always intersected, right? It was, you know, what we're doing as, you know, strength coaches or trainers, and we're prescribing this stuff for warm up, and we're guessing this is what it's going to be doing.
Right.
On your side as a clinician, you have to be sure, like you have to almost have like definites.
Well, not necessarily even definites. It's just a matter of what value do I receive when I put that guesswork into practice and say, this is what's happening, okay. Right?
Can we see enough if we just said like, all right, if you did something and then you saw an effect in the next set, we can almost say, all right, well, that did something that gave us a benefit to improve. Yeah,
absolutely.
Movement. Okay.
Possibly. Right. You can say that. What you can always say is, I have this person standing in front of me. I did X and immediately following something appeared to change. Mm-hmm. And that's all you can say. Now, why that happened is guesswork, and it really doesn't matter
on the
level of the gym floor, because what you're saying is I saw a benefit here, I believe. I don't know. It could have just been a coincidence, but there seemed to be a benefit. Why that benefit, I'm not sure. Now, if you find later on that it seems that this is the case, and not because someone said so, but because it's been tested in some way and found to be reliably consistent that this is probably what's happening, then there can be a benefit to knowing why it happens, because you can use that information to improve how you deliver that thing that you programmed, right? So if I find out that I'm getting the glutes more activated, then I can say, okay, so perhaps if I do something, you know, even more specific, something better might happen. So we can use information to guide the way that we program and the things that we come up with.
Right.
But until we know that for fact, what you're saying when you say, well, I must be activating something, means that you're eliminating any other possibility to why you might change something around in your programming. So until you know that for fact, why are you saying that? And all to right, any individual right. that's
you,
yeah, right.
you black and white bastard. It can only be on and off. All right. I'm just kidding. All right. So just don't stick electrodes to my butt. All right, John, if you're going to test me out.
Yeah, that's not me. Right. That's not my deal.
So let's keep going forward. So talking about, I think it is just so much better to talk about in generalities as much as we can for this stuff. But I'm just kind of curious where you're at. This is an internet debate that we can kind of have with two people, but you know, for adults, are you going to be doing as a physical therapist with the background that you have? How do you feel these days about spinal loading and stuff like that for back squatting and all that? What's your research telling you? Where are we at?
I'm not, you know, I think that it becomes relative to demands and needs. I don't have an issue with spinal loading per se, and it's probably well and good enough. There's not what ends up happening, or at least I'm not as familiar with the area of research that would look at the type of loading that we might encounter as people that are regularly exercising, right?
Or the effects of like the compressive loading on the spine.
Yeah, I'm not too worried about that. The spine compressively is pretty damn strong. Our spines are pretty damn strong. And that's one of the things that unfortunately negatively has come out, I think, from some of these research. You know, you can say, okay, the loading goes up how many thousands of newtons. But what you didn't tell me is whether or not that matters.
Is this like the Stu McGill stuff?
Yeah, sort of. I mean, not. I guess so. It's the sort of thing where you say, "All right, this is what's happening mechanically."
Okay.
So when we talk about mechanically, does it matter? Sometimes yes, and sometimes no.
Mm-hmm.
If something happens and you're loading the spine and it doubles the rates, or sitting is this much newtons above standing, and whatever it is, that's all well and good. But does it matter? Does it matter if I loaded the spine and that happened? It might. I'm not saying that it doesn't. It might. Or for people that are, you know, relatively sedentary versus athletes or whatever it is, there are lots of different discussions to be had. As a general, no, I'm not really worried about loading the spine. If you've had a history of back pain of some kind, I'm going to be a lot more cautious about that, and that's going to be a different type of conversation. Mm-hmm. For a general individual, I don't really have a problem with loading a spine. Certainly things change when your form changes significantly, right? And there's no reason necessarily to load a spine unduly, right? I'm not going to tell someone, oh, just squat however you want. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know that it doesn't matter. So
might
I'm not
going to do like
pretend.
A nice side bend while you're doing that.
Yeah, right. Too. Exactly. But I'm not going to be so super worried about, oh my God, you know, we can't back squat you because your back will break in 10 years. Like that's, I have no reason to suspect that either.
I guess
under most considerations, most exercise is good, right?
Yeah, yeah.
We can just agree on that. Most exercise is good. There's really very little saying exercise is bad for you. At extremes, there can be some negatives to it. But if we're just dealing with general population people, why are we taking them to an extreme in the first place?
Totally. And I think this is with me saying right now, I work for, you know, the single leg guy.
Right.
But along with that, I think for me to look back on my thought process with all this stuff over the last, I don't know, I guess I've been an MBSC for going on my seventh year now, and which, John, we're getting old, dude.
Yeah, I know.
But because we were doing this a long time before that, I left, you know, Christy Sports Performance or Christy Performance at the time, and I was very much like astonished, like, man, you got a back squat, like, right. Man, I can't believe, like, I get to almost watch my back when I'm at NBSC lifting because I still want a back squat. And then right. I ended up getting to the point where I guess I over time I was convinced, like, man, like, why would you do any kind of spinal loading? Why would you even take that risk? Where is the risk benefit scale for this thing that is showing you that, hey man, you should really, like, backloading is where it's at. Like, that is where you're going to get your bang for your buck. When I've seen just so many people, so many athletes come in now and get incredible benefits and never have one person ever get injured with a riff at all of it, it's split squat or a mm-hmm. single legged, like, pistol squat, and loading up with dumbbells and vests and maybe at worst case, maybe some front loading. But even we got away from that, or maybe I should better mm-hmm. clarify, like, a goblet position or right. Like a front rack position with kettlebells. Right. And I just, maybe again, it's just been from being in that environment so long, but I still don't see where that benefit is to get people in such, like, a, you know, such crazy, like, shoulder external rotation, and then having, in a perfect world with great form, that just doesn't happen. You know, like, with people, I mean, again, it's, if you're having a one-on-one session with a coach, it might be a different story, but I mean, people's bodies are going to find a way to cheat unless they are, you know, a Dave Tather, like a power lifter that's just been doing this for so long, they know how their body is going to feel whenever they're going to get in a perfect position or something like that. But I don't know. It's just a debate that I just don't see.
Now, there's two things that you bring up. And on the one, I agree with you. Is there a benefit to back squatting? Is there something that I can get only through back squatting? If the answer is yes, then I have to decide whether or not that I need that. But if the answer is no, and I'm not sure that we have an answer, you know, that says that there is something unique about back squatting, then I have no problem with that position. I have no problem in saying I'm not sure if back squatting is good or bad, but I'm not sure that I need to do it anyway, so I'll right. refrain from back squatting. I'm totally fine with that. If I'm an Olympic weightlifter or a powerlifter, that doesn't fly because there is something specific that I need to do.
And I apologize that back squat, right. I apologize for jumping in, but and let me be clarified before people take anything that I say out of context. If there's any place that anyone should ever be back squatting in the world, it is at Cressy Sports Performance, because those guys, like, again, well, you know, with Greg there, with Eric there, that just the coaching staff, and, you know, previously Tony, like, man, if you ever want to see perfect lifting and perfect form, and that is where I got my crazy, like, needing to have perfect form with anything that my athletes ever do, it was from there.
Right. But now
this is just talking, like, in a more general sense, where you have someone like the uneducated trainer that's yes. just like just got their, like yeah. their CSCS, and in the book it said, you know, back squatting, go do that.
Right. And we can certainly, you know, but the other side of what I was going to say about what you were saying is the things that you pointed out are valid, but they're valid only if it's actually true. You know, in other words, like, well, you know, shoulder external rotation, so what? If it's bad for this individual, then I agree. If it's someone with a history of shoulder pain, that may not be a great position for them. But I was just watching, you know, I was watching one of my friends from Rutgers. He was on the Rutgers Olympic weightlifting team. He's a beast. Mm-hmm. And he was off training for a while. His knee may have been injured. I don't remember what had happened, but I just saw a video of him coming back in, and he did a clean and jerk with a little over 300 pounds. And dude's about 5'3" and about 140 pounds, I think. And if you, so we're talking about, you know, spinal loading, there is an enormous amount of spinal loading going right there. And there is such with all these athletes that are doing this. Mm-hmm. Some athletes will be fine. Some athletes won't, because we're all individuals and our experiences and structures and all these other things will be different. So the blanket statement only makes sense if it blanket is true, but we don't really know that. So
exactly.
If you know, all these things to consider, certainly to consider, but then we get into the argument of, well, what is perfect form? Do we need perfect form? Can we have, and who's said what form is perfect? There are lots of different discussions of of what form should and should not look like. And on top of that, you have different types of exercises. So a, you know, a back squat with your feet turned out may or may not be perfect for some person, but it's an entire type of exercise for someone else. It, so these things only matter if we know that they do. Mm-hmm. Right now, we don't. Now, it's certainly reasonable and fair to say, I don't want someone back squatting when they're leaning forward and their back is rounded and they're all these kinds of stuff. Absolutely. Let's not have that happen. But where do we determine what perfect is? Where do we know that this person leaning forward and, you know, a degree or two here, leaning back a degree or two there, how do we know, is that imperfect? Is that dangerous? Is it not dangerous? How do we know this? We don't. We just don't. We're assuming. Mm-hmm. We don't have x-ray machines hooked up. We can all have these discussions of biomechanically this and your neck pack that nonsense, but you don't know it when you're standing in front of a person. You can make a general assumption of what looks like it's happening and what doesn't look like it's happening, but it doesn't mean that you're right about it. So train form as best as you, you know, perceive. We're all going to do that, mm-hmm. but don't make assumptions on what they have to look like in order to have earned the right to do this exercise. Mm. It's rubbish. If they can do it and that you're happy with it, then allow them to do it if it makes sense in your programming. And if it doesn't, don't fearmonger them into thinking this is a bad thing. If you want to remove an exercise, do so. If you're not satisfied with the performance, do it. But deciding arbitrarily what we should or should not, you know, employ in our workouts doesn't make sense if you don't have someone standing in front of you and you know what their specific needs are.
Okay. Yeah, we won't spend too much time on that.
But I'm fine. But having said that, I'm fine with your logic. I'm fine with the idea of saying, I don't know why I would give a back squat arbitrarily to someone. Totally cool. And you have your reasoning. You have your logic. It's fine. I have no argument with that.
So Kevin's right. All right. So let's, let's move on. I mean, we're already, God, we've already been recording for 45 minutes, man.
How we always do, man.
So let's start taking it home a little bit because, I mean, you talked a little bit about like what you've been interested in the last, you know, year or so, getting really into the research on pain and stuff like that. Yeah. So, I mean, what are some real like take home points that people can have when it comes to this stuff? What have you been learning about that, you know, isn't going to be, I know a lot of this is for your setting as a PT, but right. You know, so many people who listen to this are the general population people. What can they take home, or what talking points can they just have in the back of their head for when it comes to this information so they can make use of it too?
Yeah. I mean, I honestly listened to the Strength Coach podcast. There was a lot of that because they're coming from like a coaching training standpoint. Right. So the idea was to try to deliver that sort of idea, but the idea was to deliver that idea. That is awful. But essentially, pain is not just biomechanical. Sometimes it is. So clean up the form. Be aware of what you're, you know, doing and not doing with your clients. If everything is always overhead pressing or something, maybe variation would be an advantage in that setting, right? So variation, variety of skill sets and practice, and these things are all good things. So all this stuff you sort of do and practice already, most likely, is still good. Don't take any of that away. What you want to do is you want to add to it. So be aware of the type of messages and imagery and information that you provide to your clients, how that may affect them. If there are certain exercises that are bad and certain exercises that are good in terms of what you explain to your clients, that can set them up for a negative response. Because if I tell you walking down that alleyway is bad because people get murdered in that alleyway, that's setting someone up. Whether or not that's actually true, they're going to be scared every time they walk through an alleyway. Mm-hmm. So we don't want to create an environment of danger, because that's what pain is. Pain is a signal of danger. There's a threat to the system, and that threat can be a lot of different things, not just mechanics type of stuff, right? It can be a threat to the functioning of the system. So you want to eliminate the threats that aren't really real, right? You don't want to create more threats than there are. The world is already a pretty, you know, dangerous place. We don't need to make it more dangerous. Exercise is healthy. Exercise is good. There is no research that says, no, people shouldn't exercise. It's bad for you. So when we start to create negative experiences with exercise, is it any wonder that people's backs start to randomly hurt and people's necks and shoulders and knees start to randomly hurt? Not without injury, right? They didn't bash their elbow into the wall. They just started having an elbow hurting them. And all you know while you're standing there is that your client's central nervous system is saying something bad has happened or may happen. There's a threat. There's a threat involving the elbow. And you don't know what that is. And that threat can be because something may be occurring to the tissues and whatever and all these things that we think. Or it may be because you said so many times, get that elbow in, or you know, you're going to hurt it, or whatever it is, that the central nervous system and the assessment of position and movement is saying, you know what, that elbow's flying out again and we need to stop before that bad thing occurs. Pain works in that way. It can work in that way. So as a trainer, make the world a safe and happy place and empower your clients. Don't make it a dangerous place. Mm-hmm. And think about how you communicate, because that communication is key.
Yeah, and I, just before I forget, I definitely want you to check out Anna Hartman. She did a in-service at MBSC this past week, and she was at Exos, or Athletes Performance, for a couple of years, and now she's kind of going off and doing her own thing at a company called Movement Rev. But I forget what the guy's last name was. Something Beach.
Okay.
But anyways, it was just kind of like an interesting thing in terms of like warm-ups and rest states and things like that. I'd be interested to see your take on that. Now, I'll probably end up getting her on the show. So if people are interested about that stuff, I would check her out and talk some Body by Bowl online if you're a member, which is cool. I always plug in my own stuff too, John. You know, I get to pay the bills. Got to pay
the bills. Pay those Patreon bills, yo.
Yeah, and maybe we'll wrap it up there and kind of say, yeah, if you enjoy the show, if you think it's worth supporting, I really appreciate it if people go to patreon.com/thefitcast. You get a bunch of extra content, and you get it early. You get to hear agenda-free segments where it's a little bit more off the cuff after the music at the end of the show. Plus, you get shows 1 week early, and you get an exclusive RSS feed, so you can still grab it through iTunes or whatever your favorite podcast feed is. And, you know, again, it's one of those things where it gives you an outlet to support the people who are producing content that you think is worth supporting. And hopefully that is what the FitCast is to you. And, of course, you can check out thefitcast.com. You can check out the show on iTunes. You can find John. John, do you have a website again?
Nah, I've been talking rubbish about getting that thing up for years, and I'm clearly not. Though. I'm on Facebook.
And you've been on Twitter a little bit now, too.
A little bit here and there, yeah.
Wow, that's cool. Search for Jonathan Fass on Facebook.
Wherever.
You can find, look for the guy with the beard and the thick hair.
Pretty intense beard.
And I think that is going to just about do it. Just for programming stuff, I may have already recorded this up by the time that you hear it, but I think for the next couple episodes, I'm definitely going to have Georgia Dow back on before the end of the year. I'm going to be having Josh Henkin on from Ultimate Sandbags. I got a couple of those a week or two ago, and those things kick ass. So it'll be cool to talk to him a little bit about how that can work into your programming to add some variety and the cool stuff you can do with those, and just what, you know, he's just a great coach. He does some awesome stuff. He's at Perform Better too every year. If you ever go to those, definitely recommend checking out his stuff. And I'm trying to think. I will have Lee on again at the start, right at the start of the year. So if you do have questions, you can start getting those to me on Twitter or whatever. I'm at Kevin Larrabee, and even on Instagram, I'm on Instagram, John.
Oh, you did, didn't you?
So I do some exercise videos on there to show people what I do, because I haven't trained at MBSC in almost a month now. I train exclusively at my house. Gonna wrap it up. Hope you guys have a great week. If you're a Patreon supporter, keep listening, because you're going to get some more content in a couple seconds.